Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Peyton Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. How you doing over there, Lee? Did you get some lunch? Are you energized? Are you ready to go for this one?
Yes, I am fired up because one of the guests is going to talk about something that's interesting to me and I hope to all of our listeners, B Corporations.
And for that very reason, I personally organized a schedule where he is going to be at the top of the show.
There you go.
I did that for you. I did that for me. I did that for him and our listeners. First up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, in welcoming to the broadcast, co-founder and CEO, the Grand Poobah, to Chief Mahuna for Broad Green Solutions, Mr. Mike Morris. How are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Now, Mike, Broad Green Solutions, before we get into the B Corp part of it, what is the service you guys are providing?
So what exactly would you say you do here? Right? We're both a management and technology consultancy under one roof. It's not the most novel idea. We're in our third year, but we've just watched a lot of competitors move out of one of those two spaces. So we come with sort of a 1-2 punch.
Now, what was the impetus of starting the business? Were you working for another consulting firm?
Yeah, I was with another consulting firm for 15 years. It was a great place. I joked for years and said it was a tough girlfriend to break up with because it just had so many good things going right for it. But if in the end, you're just not in love. For me, I had an entrepreneur.
It wasn't them.
Yeah, it wasn't them. It was me. right. You know, we could still be friends.
right.
I had an entrepreneurial desire going at least back to high school or college. I have a co-founder, Jared Ripps, a wonderful human being. We both were looking to do something similar around the same time. And so we went for it. We're now in our third year and having a great time with it.
Now, what was the impetus to going certified C Corp, B Corp?
Right. So, man.
Was that part of the strategic decision when you were discussing this?
Yeah, it was from the very beginning, right? We incorporated out of Delaware as a benefit corporation, which allowed us the latitude to pursue certified B Corp. So we're a for-profit business, but with a social purpose.
Now, maybe you can define some terms for the listener who isn't familiar with it.
Right. So, benefit corporation, it's a lot like a traditional C Corp, regular corporation,
right, but
with a couple of critical differences. One, because of the way the laws are set up, we are not just focused on shareholder return. I'm a shareholder. I care about that. It's important. In our decision framework, we can also consider what's good for the employees, what's good for the community, what's good for the environment, and how we can fulfill our social purpose. So at a traditional C Corp, legally, you're pretty much limited to focusing on shareholder return.
Right, and not everybody's aware of that distinction, right? And
is
the B Corp relatively new, or has it been around?
You know, I'd be hard-pressed to tell you how old it is. I know when we went through the process in our first year to pursue the certification, there were maybe 1,000 of them. There's some big-name B2C companies, so like Patagonia. I'm unapologetic about being a beer guy. So
you got to fill out forms or something, though, or you can't just say we want to be this and you check this box and say
right. So once we were incorporated as a benefit corporation, then you work with, there's a nonprofit called B Lab, and they come along and they certify you, and you got to prove it. I mean, we just went through the recertification process. Proud to say that last week we got recertified. And man, they made us work for it. They kept wanting more documentation, more proof. Are we doing what we said we'd do? So our social purpose. We take 10% of our consulting time and we give that away to nonprofits and social entrepreneurs. And so for your listeners, we are always looking for new clients. We can give that time away to. I call it the world's greatest business problem. The bigger we get, the bigger our 10% gets. And so we focus on groups that serve the poorest of the poor and groups that build up human capital with education.
So that, when you're getting the word out about that and trying to find that next client that meets the bill, are you getting kind of inundated with companies saying, pick me?
We're getting more momentum now. It's such a unique thing. I think in the first year, people were scratching their head like, well, it sounds interesting. Along the way, we're getting some real momentum. We have people that will flip opportunities our way and say, hey, this sounds like a group that could benefit from what you're doing. And so back to your original question, this was a strategic decision in the beginning to pursue certified B Corp status. We were looking for a way to have an impact bigger than our company. So for all of our projects, paid engagements, or the time we give away out of what we call our purpose fund, we're looking for every project to have a 10 to 20x return on our fees. So we've been able to have a bigger social impact than our total revenue. I mean, think about that. We can't give away all of our revenue. We've got to pay our people. We got some rent, some expenses. We've been able to have a bigger social impact because we found the people that already are great at serving these different needs, and we just supercharge them the same way we do with some of our big enterprise clients.
Now, does being a B Corp help you in recruiting people to work in the firm? Are they more kind of mission-oriented? Are you getting a different type of person?
It actually has. It's been sort of a nice surprise along the way. I would say, you know, we have some clients who are probably neutral about us being a B Corp. They are,
right, you
know,
as long as you're getting the job done.
We need really good consultants to solve our problem. Right. If you guys can do that, that's great. Some of them care a little more. But we've found it to be a bit more of an advantage on the recruiting side, especially in the younger demographic. We get really positive feedback because people aren't seeing someplace where they can use their superpowers and also serve some social need.
So now, how do you integrate it in working with a new client or an engagement? Is it just part of the DNA?
How do you mean? Mentioning our B Corp status,
right,
or whatnot?
Like, is that something, is it... Are you kind of loud and proud about it, or is it something that people...
He puts a hat on, like in the first meeting, yeah, right?
I'm a B. What's the B stand for on your shirt?
No big flashing buttons or anything, right? No. You know, it's in our materials. You know, first meeting with a client, we'll bring it up. Or if we're sharing content with them, we have kind of some standard content we'll put at the end of a presentation. Some people are fascinated and they seize on it, and some people are like, that's really interesting. It's sort of like if you go in to talk about one service with a client, and you have these others they're not interested in, it's generally interesting for some people. Some people really seize on it.
Now, are you finding that more and more companies are even aware that this exists as a choice?
This has been really fun. We work with very sophisticated, educated leaders, you know, global travelers. We throw out B Corp and they're like, what is that? And they're sort of fascinated that there's this legal entity, that there's this business and social movement. And one of the reasons I was excited to come here, at least I think this is part of your deal, you guys are trying to put a spotlight on some good things in business, because like, the bad stories are interesting. I follow those. You know, I have kind of a, you know, one of my guilty pleasures is reading about white collar crime. You guys are really creative, you know, but, you know, unfortunately, there's a generation of folks that think business is what they see in the, you know, it's the evil guy in the Hollywood movie tweaking his mustaches, right. You know, how can I get more money from widows? And, you know, it's like, I know those people are out there, but I've worked at a lot of companies. Most of them are not like that. You know, there's a few good ones in the group.
That
right?
was the impetus of us starting this business.
Yeah, because so thank you.
We saw that business is always the villain.
Yeah.
Like how many movies?
Right.
Well, look at that generous business owner. He's saving the day. Exactly. Wow, that's awesome. That
you know, they
make
introduced
a movie.
The factory owner, and he's always kind of got this shadow over him.
Right.
You know?
How's he going to exploit those children later?
I will tell you, we have people who I would put, you know, on the question of, not on the question of is there a God, but on the question of is there such a thing as a business with a social purpose? They're atheists. They will tell you that's BS. That's garbage.
Right.
You know, if you want to do something good, pay your taxes, employ people, treat them well, and then let them go do some, you know, clean up a park sometime. You know, they just don't believe in it. And we don't pick a fight. That's okay. They're allowed to, hey, God bless America. They're allowed to their opinion. Yeah.
Well, for us, it was a personal thing because we didn't want young people to not choose business as a path because they felt that business was always evil. So that's why a lot of our efforts go to kind of young entrepreneurs and to kind of educate them.
Very cool.
To the power of business to do good for themselves and for the community.
Yeah. I put a challenge to each of my kids. It was more of an assignment. So they're 14, 13, and 8. And I said, before you graduate from high school, you have to start either a business or a nonprofit. I'll give a little plug. So there's a group in town called Break Into Business. I don't know if you've ever connected with these folks.
We have.
And so my kids went through one of their accelerated camps. Two of them went through it. And it was a great thing for them. It's not like I want them to go start more businesses. And make money. I just want them to not be intimidated by it and to see that it can be done. And if they choose to do something else, there are a lot of fields out there. But, you know, you don't have to have a bunch of degrees and a long pedigree to start a business. You can do it as a middle school kid.
And it's a mindset that you can create something from nothing.
Right.
You can choose yourself and be successful. You don't have to wait to be chosen or picked in order to make it in the world.
Right, which is why I told them not just a business, they could also start a nonprofit. You can be an entrepreneur. We say we work with nonprofits and social entrepreneurs. We found some other for-profit entities like us that have a social purpose, and we've helped them with some challenges. So you could play it on both sides, but being an entrepreneur is a mindset. It's an approach to how
and you get to make the rules.
Work. Yeah,
but that's the thing. You decide who you want as clients and who you don't want as clients.
Right. You live with the risks. You live with the right. results. I think we're going to hear a little bit about risk management in a while. So you live with the risks and you live with the results.
So now, out on your own, as opposed to being part of a larger entity, how has that been different for you?
Oh, man. And I should say this is a compliment to the firm. I truly enjoyed my 15 years. It was just a great chapter. I mean, but it's so different. You know, I joined that firm when we were probably around $35 million in revenue. And when I left, it was north of 400, 450-ish maybe. And and I thought that seemed small. You know, then when you start off, you got zero.
Because all your clients were so much larger, right?
Right.
So you're like...
And you, the resources you can tap into. I will tell you
how's
one of the
things... How's the help desk different?
Well, I'll tell you what's fascinating. Because a large part of our work, the technology side, we do consulting around the cloud, helping mm-hmm. people to move to the cloud, enterprises, nonprofits. We decided to eat our own dog food. So we went all in. We're everything cloud-based. We actually put together a little presentation that we shared with some startup nonprofits, social entrepreneurs. We showed them it's like 40 or 45 different fractional use, cloud-based software as a service that we employ, that we leverage to run our business. So we have the back office of a big business without a back office staff. I mean, we have a variety of, it's pretty amazing the things that we've been able to find.
So these are all kind of software service tools that you're utilizing?
Right. And, you know, we've got some SaaS-based products. So we use a tool called Nexonia for our expense management. And it flows right into our financials, which are SaaS-based as well. And even in the physical world, we've got three different law firms we use for different things. We've been able to tap into them. Like we have a law department.
Right.
I'll give a plug for Rome, the fractional use office space around the corner. They've been great. And we went in there just to, the co-working space, just to get started. And we realized it makes great sense for our business as a consultancy. We don't want a big fancy office with a bunch of consultants, and we want people out with the clients. And so now we've got four locations in town and a 30 or 40 meeting room format. So that it was eye-opening for the nonprofit crowd that they could get the support that used to only be available to bigger companies by the drip software to physical, desks and whatnot.
So now, is that how you work with clients? You kind of educate them to that level of service? That seems pretty...
No, that was, to be honest, that was just something we were giving back. A lot of people have helped us in starting our business. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a difference to your original question. I think I appreciated people's help before. Man, I really appreciate it now. When somebody helps you with your business, and, every day you're trying to push the cliff a little farther away,
right.
But it's always out there, man.
you know it's there.
Yeah, it gets you out of bed in the morning. You keep hustling. So I enjoy that. But yeah, I really appreciate the help. So for us, what we call Born in the Cloud, the business model, we just have been giving that away to folks. Say, hey, here's what we do. It could help you.
And
it's generated some interest, but it's not
something
we make money with.
Right. And then, so when you're working with your clients, can you walk us through what that looks like? What's the pain your paying clients are having
right.
that they're like, hey, I got to call the folks at Broadgreen?
Yeah, I think to some degree we're in the competitiveness business. So we're helping our clients to achieve some competitive edge. That's why they're paying us. For some of them, we are an Amazon Web Services partner. They're a giant in the cloud business and their platform keeps growing. We'll help clients either start leveraging AWS and the cloud for what their needs are, or migrate over to that. And yeah, I mean, the costs are pretty amazing, the savings they can get up, but also the agility and the competitiveness, the ways they can leverage their data. So, our clients are facing their own challenges and they're looking for some way to innovate, to get an edge, to get a competitive edge. And so whether it's our cloud business or the way that we help them leverage their data, or even just some of the change management work we do, That's what an engagement looks like for us.
Now, are they typically coming to you after a crisis has occurred and they're like, uh-oh, something bad just happened?
Let me think back. I don't think, because we're in our third year now, I don't think we've had anybody come to us with a crisis. So we're not really a crisis management firm. It's more increasing competitive pressures in the market. Back to the earlier conversation about kind of our life in the cloud business model. Some of them are watching firms go from zero to serious competitor very fast. And they want to know, what are those guys doing? How are they moving so fast? How are they getting these insights out of their data? How did they scale this from zero to huge? So even the big shops are watching that.
Mm-hmm. And then what type of industries do you specialize in, certain industries?
So we're Atlanta based, and a lot of our work is still here in Atlanta. And, you know, because you're in the Atlanta business community, it's kind of a cross industry town. You know, there's a few big players. So we tend to be a cross industry group. One of the things we never expected, but has come out of our first, you know, one of our first industry groups has been in the nonprofit space. So we do actually paid work with nonprofits, because I think to some degree they like our model. So if we had an industry group, that would probably be it, but we're pretty cross industry.
And there's some very large nonprofits here.
There are.
Oh, yeah.
There are. And that was a, you know, that was a bit of a surprise for us. That we, and we'll travel up and down the East Coast. We're kind of, you know, this side of the Mississippi. So maybe draw, well, maybe if you just drew a line from Dallas to Chicago, because we can get in on the most of the, get into most of those cities on one hub.
And then your, the people that work with you, are they virtual? Because you mentioned like using a Roam. So everybody is kind of.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we have employees. We also leverage some partners for different parts of our work. And we actually have to stay in a discipline of forcing ourselves to meet up, you know, during the week, because we go out to the client sites and we have virtual office space. And so we'll have people and we'll say, okay, where's everybody going to be on Friday? And let's try to meet up. But we run a pretty distributed team.
Now, how do you manage that when you have workers all over the place? And in your previous life, it was probably a similar challenge.
Hire really great people. You know, Chick-fil-A is not a client of ours, I'll tell you that, but I've always admired their hiring process. I've known people that have gone in there. I think they had to go through like 14 interviews. I was a reference check for somebody. It felt like I got interviewed for a half hour. It wasn't just, you know, dates of employment and that kind of stuff. But they hire really great folks, and then they don't need a lot of bureaucracy and watchers and people checking the checkers and a lot of forms. They just have great people that do great things. So we look for people that are obsessively client focused. And, you know, I'll tell you, the B Corp part of our business, it draws a different kind of person. You know, they come to work. Yeah, they've got a great brain. Because if you want to, you know, you want to do consulting work, you gotta have a decent brain on your, you know, your head on your shoulders. But they come in with a heart too. So, you know, we don't need a ton of oversight. Our leadership team, we're plugging in with our project teams all the time. So we're never that far away from all of the work. And each of us are doing project work as well.
And what is the typical kind of first engagement where they kind of get on your radar? Is it usually a smaller project just to kind of get to know each other?
I think all of our clients, it started with something small. You know, we'll come in and we can do some pretty rapid assessments. So we can kind of come in and do a rapid assessment or a more comprehensive assessment for them. And that can be days, you know, a more comprehensive one might be a couple, it might be a few weeks. And then we come back and say, okay, here's what we think your issues are and here's what we think you should do. And a good number of our recommendations have nothing to do with Broad Green Solutions. You know, they could find somebody else, they could go do them on their own. And, you know, there's a reason they called us because of usually our area of expertise. And so we can point to that and show how we could help them as well.
All right, but they called you, because that's the question I have, is how the whole sales and marketing thing works for a firm like yours, because after 17 minutes of conversation, you got me, man. You know, I mean, I'm impressed with what you're doing, how you're doing it, why you're doing it, but it occurs to me it would be difficult to have those 17-minute conversations with, you know, the senior-level executives who can and will write a check to solve some of these problems. So I just wondered how the whole sales and marketing thing...
Well, our business is highly, highly relational. We always look for something we can commit to for somebody on our nickel up front, to show our investment in the relationship. Because bringing in a consultant, it's a risk for them. So we'll take a risk first and try. And you know, some of our clients, these relationships go back quite a few years. And sometimes we meet somebody new and it can be a long cycle to start doing work with them. We've built this as an evergreen business. We're not trying to flip it. And so that gives us the luxury of patience. If we find somebody that's our type of person and they don't have needs right away, but they want to work with us, I mean, all right, we'll be here next year.
Right.
We'll be here the year after that, God willing. So it's a relationship-based business. And, you know, a lot of our leads come through our contacts. We try to put out some valuable content, get in front of folks. We don't do a lot of blitzing folks with, you know, spam. We've never gotten a client by putting up flyer under windshield wiper or anything like that.
Really?
But you know, if you know your stuff and if the space is hot, then you can put some content out and somebody will look at it and they won't be offended that you're trying to help them solve a problem by giving them little bites of content along the way. I mean, I think it's a little bit of your business, right? You give people some good content, you can get their attention. It's a crowded market, but it's been, you know, market's been good to us now.
Now, on your website, one of the tabs says chasm crossers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So there was a book that came out, I don't know when it would have been, called Crossing the Chasm. It had a big impact on our team. It's an older book now, but they talk about the technology adoption lifecycle. You get your innovators, right? It's kind of the first part of the bell curve. A small number of them. They're tinkering. They're out in the labs doing cool new stuff. Next group's your early adopters, right? These are business folks. They're solving a business problem. They're willing to play with the technology to get it to work. Book describes a chasm, right? Between there and the early majority market is a gap. And so what we do, you know, the people on the next part of the bell curve, you know, across that chasm, they want something that's a bit more proven. They don't just want the product. They want the solution, which a lot of times can include professional services. So we monitor that space. We have our own internal methodology where we're watching technologies as they're approaching that chasm, as they're coming across, and then as they're entering that mainstream market. And that's where we start to place our bets. That's where we say, this is a space where mainstream clients are going to want help. They're going to be looking for people. And you're not out pushing solutions on people when they're feeling the need and they're feeling the demand for it. It's a great place to be.
Now, can you share an example of something that went along that path and you were able to kind of catch it right when the...
You know, I don't know that we've ever caught one right on the dot. These things aren't moving in minutes.
Right, they don't ring a bell when they're going to
cross the chasm, right? Right. Light goes on.
That's the chasm bell.
And you missed it, right? You could be a little early and a little late and still be safe. I look at Amazon Web Services, which is really a very robust platform. A lot of people think of them as cloud-based servers or cloud-based storage. So one of the areas that's actually pretty far along the curve, a lot of people are already running their websites there.
Right.
It's not that hard. It makes a lot of sense.
And a lot of the large organizations.
They can scale up or down. So even if they're kind of anti-cloud or they're ambiguous about it, they're still probably running something web-based over there just because of the elasticity of the solution, its ability to scale up or down. Pretty far along the curve. But within Amazon Web Services, there are things that are still on the way, right? And some that are crossing in. So we look at like Amazon Redshift. It's their data warehouse solution. That is entering the mainstream market. I don't want to give away all our cards, but that's entering the mainstream market. They've got some other really cool stuff. You know, our view is they've got some folks in their lab that are hanging out with the folks at, I don't know, Berkeley and Stanford in their labs. So we kind of get little glimpses of what's coming.
Right.
And then we have, you know, people in our network that we consider real technology strategists. And they're starting to tinker with some of these things that are coming across. I mean, we go to their conference every year and we're plugged in with those folks. They always have great new stuff coming. Not all of it's in the mainstream market yet.
All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more, have a conversation with you or someone on your team and really talk through some of these topics?
BroadGreenSolutions.com is our website, BroadGreenSolutions.com. We're listed. If you go to the website for all B Corps and you look up B Corps in Georgia, I think you find us, at least you should.
Absolutely.
So if you remember B Corp, you don't remember Broad Green and you want to find those consultants. I don't think there's another B Corp consultancy in Georgia right now. There might be. I'd love to meet them if they
exist. Hopefully there'll be more.
Yeah. Right. I'd love to see it. You know, it's interesting. We've given away a lot of free advice to people that are interested in becoming B Corps. It's not a paid offering for us, but you know, it's part of our way of, you know, a lot of people have helped us since we kind of reached back and pull some others along the path too.
Yeah, I hope more and more companies consider that as a way to...
You guys might see them if people get interested. So anybody comes up, say, what happened to that card from that Broad Green guy?
That's right.
we know a guy. We can put you in that. You know, send them our way. We'd be happy to.
Absolutely.
Well, no, those are exactly the kind of folks we want in our circle, right? We want to celebrate business in general, and we certainly want to celebrate businesses with that type of mindset, that approach to serving the market. So yes, please do continue to keep us informed and get us connected with folks like this. I am so glad that we got a chance to have you come in today. We got to do this some more.
Hey, I'd be happy to. It's been a blast. I'm kind of realizing, hey, there's a mic here. You know, like, we've had this whole conversation. It's a lot of fun, so I appreciate it.
Sure.
You guys mind if I stick around?
Hey, we would love for you to.
Awesome. We got some good guys up next. Thanks.
All right, Lee. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have founder and chief executive officer with Banyan Hills Technologies, Mr. Steve Latham. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
So tell us, before we dive into your segment, what'd you learn in that last bit there?
Oh, there was so much there. It's similar. When we talk about Banyan, we'll talk about the services that we provide, and there's a lot of synergies between our two businesses. And I look forward to following up with you on some maybe how we can work together. But also I found the B space, that's just unbelievable. Very informative. I had no idea. So
well, thanks.
I
learned something. Let me know. I'm happy to help.
Well, why don't you share a little bit about Banyan? What are you doing for folks?
Sure. So we are, there's two parts to our business. One is a consulting services business that's focused on the Internet of Things. And really the purpose of that is to help our customers understand what IoT is, and then also how to go about implementing IoT successfully, mm-hmm. and then to drive meaningful revenue into the business. And we peel off a portion of that revenue and then reinvest it into a platform that we've been building. So the second part of our business in the long-term goal of Banyan's business is to take a platform to market. It's called Canopy, and it is an IoT platform.
And Internet of Things, can you talk about that a little bit? That seems to be a buzzword that's kind of popular these days.
Yeah, and there's lots of definitions. I mean, I think at its simplest level, it's about connecting the physical world. Anything that has an on or off switch, connecting it to an enterprise over the internet.
Mm-hmm. And then this isn't for just some companies. More and more companies are kind of implementing this, at least type of thinking, right?
It's unbelievable. Banyan's focus, if you look us up, we're focused on unattended kiosk, vending, and helping operators manage those networks of devices.
Right.
But we are getting calls every day from adjacent markets that it's just really incredible. And I think the primary drivers for that are everybody is considering automation to drive operational efficiency into their business. And you look at, we talk all the time about, you've got these competing pressures that are enabling IoT. You've got the cost of running a business going up through labor changes and labor rates. And then you have the cost of technology and automating.
That's going down.
It's going down.
Right.
And then you have the capabilities of technology accelerating at a very rapid pace.
Right.
And so all of that makes an average operator start to think about, hey, what can I do to remove some of the manual labor costs in my business?
Isn't that one of those unintended consequences of raising like a minimum wage?
We were watching that carefully last year, and as was everyone else. I mean, if you look at what Panera Bread and McDonald's, where they're taking the front end of their store and they're replacing people standing behind a register with a self-service kiosk to place orders, mm-hmm. that's a great example of an operator trying to combat the rising wages.
Well, I was at LaGuardia. I think they have kiosks everywhere in some of the gates where you can just sit down and there's like an iPad type device and you're just hitting the thing and then somebody runs up and they're working for every restaurant.
That's exactly right. And think about that. So we've just replaced a human that's responsible for managing the customer relationship, treating that customer with respect, taking them through what we hope to be a very productive experience. And we've replaced it with a machine. And so the machine, number one, has to be working. You have to make sure that the machine's always
available.
It's got
to be fast. It can't be like kind of slow because all you're doing is making me mad now.
Right. And we sort of have one chance to get it right with you.
Right.
If the machine gives you a bad experience, you're very likely to turn away and never come back to it.
Right.
So you have to have a lot of sophistication around monitoring that device, managing that device, keeping it up and running, always making it available for the customer.
Now, Internet of Things, does that also, that descriptor, is that where like self-driving cars, is that considered that as well? I know my thermostat is that now, right?
Absolutely.
That's considered that. My Fitbit is, like all these things are so disparate, but they all fall under this umbrella.
There are so many examples of consumer products that are coming to life that you could classify as an IoT product. And I think some of the confusion for you as a homeowner might have 3 or 4 IoT consumer products in your house, and you have to go to 3 or 4 different systems to manage them. What Banyan's goal is through Canopy is to provide one user interface that all of those devices can register and connect to, and that becomes the one-time, real-time place to manage your network.
Now, are you working, you mentioned some industries, but are there certain ones that this is kind of more relevant to?
Yeah, that's where we're focused because of my experience and my background. The kiosk market is very natural to us. And we're going after that market hard and fast because we have tremendous experience in bringing those solutions to market at scale.
And a kiosk could be at a movie theater, a restaurant, like where someplace, the airport.
So if you think about good examples of a kiosk might be in one that we do, for example, We power the Redbox of Australia. So it's a different brand, but they have thousands of units out there that are handling DVD rental transactions.
Right. So that's a machine that has DVDs in there. A person could go with, I guess, a credit card, rent something.
Right.
The DVD actually pops out.
Correct.
And you leave with it.
Yeah, there's so much that people take for granted how complex that machine right. actually is. There's, you know, there's inventory that has to be managed and stocked and tracked.
And I got to know that there's no more Saving Private Ryan's, right?
Right. Exactly. You need to know when to go load that back into right. the box. You support a payment transaction, you know, hopefully a secured payment transaction from that endpoint.
Right.
And a lot of times dealing with regulations like PCI and EMV in an unattended space, which is very different than inside of a brick and mortar where you have a terminal and someone standing behind it.
Right. So that's one area that you guys are working in.
Correct.
I would think healthcare would be an opportunity.
Other examples of industries where you're starting to see this. I think healthcare is is probably one of my favorite examples. You've got the hospital, for example, that's trying to drive operational efficiencies in, and so they're looking to remove inventory waste for things like surgical supplies or scrubs or linen, for example. So they're trying to figure out ways to automate that to drive the cost out. But then you have the patient. You can, in theory, and more, we're starting to see IoT technology outfit a human and tell us vitals about the health of that human
right.
so that we can react to it. But then there's other examples. I was just telling the guys earlier that yesterday I was in Dallas meeting with the bowling industry. The bowling industry. And they
That's
are...
That's not your first... That doesn't come to mind first for high tech.
If you think about these industries, these sports that are trying to reinvent themselves to drive people into the game, bowling's an example of one where they're looking to technology to try to help it be more interesting and drive the new millennials back to the game. And if you think about what's popping up in some of these entertainment centers with bowling, you'll start to see some of those technologies come to play. So we're helping customers like that think about how to use automation and how to use sensors deployed in their environment to use IoT to their advantage.
Now, right now, who are the type of companies that are hiring you? Are these very large companies that are, you know, thinking at a large scale?
Or? Yeah, there's our ideal customer really is, you know, probably first and foremost, I think the manufacturers are very interesting to us. It sort of opens up a channel from a sales perspective, but it's an opportunity to get our software running on those devices immediately coming off the production line.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we can do is as those devices come off of the production line and come online for an operator, then we can start to sell and partner with that operator to sell services, enable services from the cloud.
In order to wring out the most value from that.
Completely. So large customers, we're going into, back to your point, we're going in and we're helping them think about how IoT needs to become a larger part of their strategy. I think, you know, one of the things that's happened is you look over the past 3 years and as IoT has come up as a term, and it's classifying what we've done for decades in some cases and in connecting all of these devices. Organizations that aren't paying attention to IoT suddenly they're reacting. We need to throw bodies at this. We need to develop an organization within our environment that can focus on this technology. And a lot of times we get brought in to pair up with that organization and that leadership of the organization to understand what's happening in the market, what does the technology look like, and how do you build a roadmap for your business that can actually use it to your advantage.
Now, is that So it sounds like a lot of your business is just education at this stage?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I really feel if you think about IoT, back to the earlier comment, sometimes adoption takes a long time. And IoT is one of these industries that technically the capabilities have been here. They've been here for decades.
And people have been. I mean, your cell phone is IoT, isn't it?
Correct, yes. You're right. Your cell phone, you think about industrial IoT where you're monitoring actuators and plants.
Right.
Some of that technology has been here. A vending
machine knows the temperature and a person could be called out to go and go there to fix it if the temperature is too high, right?
Correct.
That's been around for a while.
Right. And so now we're able to bottle that up and contain it and sell it and provide it to smaller operators like we've never been able to before. So what's happening, and I really feel like 2017 is the year. Everybody's been reorganizing around this term IoT, and there's been a lot of R&D that has been going into new products, better ways to support scale with IoT implementations. And now it's sort of like we're one of those small cars that you pull back and it's winding, right, and we're about to let go and watch it rip across the table. That's what's about to happen. I mean, IoT very clearly is going to start to show up in meaningful ways for all of us.
Now, do you think it's going to be one of these, when you let it go, it's just, there's going to be a lot of rapid change and people are going to have a hard time kind of feeling comfortable in that? I know the early adopters and the, you know, the people that are aware of it, maybe it's not going to be that scary, but for some people, this is kind of
a great big question.
Disruption. Yeah.
Exactly. There are absolutely trends that you think about security and standardization of protocols, communication protocols, and you think about socioeconomic
privacy
issues, privacy. You think about the fact that we are replacing the labor workforce in some cases, and what issues does that cause, and then how do you go address them? Absolutely. I think, you know, my favorite topics at the moment, because I think everybody, the operators that are actually instrumenting their solutions with IoT are focused on, how do I make sure that the protocols that I'm choosing for these devices to communicate together today are the right protocols, given that it's sort of the Wild West in terms of standardization.
Right. Are these really going to be foundational?
Right.
Because you don't want to be changing this a lot, right?
And how do I make sure it's secure? How do I make sure that I don't become the target where we have a major a point of failure in our network that allows someone to come in and expose critical personal information,
right,
for example. So in the way that I like to think about this is that those are new industries that are going to pop out of this. And they're not intimidating. We've been here before, but these are new opportunities. I think the replacing the labor workforce and coming up with solutions, you know, answering questions like, should we tax differently? Should we tax machines? Should we retrain the workforce so that the workforce can service these machines or architect solutions like this? I think those are important questions that are going to emerge starting this year.
Mm-hmm. And then, so for your company, how are you helping educate are you speaking at conferences? What are you doing to get the word out about this?
Absolutely. I spend a lot of time, more and more of my time is spent in discussions like this, trying to get the message out, participating in TAG, for example, participating, making sure that we're in front of our customers, making sure that we're in front of our partners, and we're helping them, one, become educated on what's happening in the industry, and then also architecting a future for them using IoT that makes sense.
Now, what for you personally is the most exciting?
The most exciting about the business?
Yeah, and this trend.
Yeah, I think that I love the idea that we are catching up with technologies that have been there for a very long time, and that we're now able to take the advances in that technology and apply them to real business problems that drive success for lots of different industries. I love, you know, the conversation that I was in yesterday, as far adjacency as it was, that it was in the bowling industry, sitting down with those guys and saying, this is what technology can do for you, was very, very fulfilling. And on the business side, I mean, a lot of what was said earlier, we have the same passion. I mean, you look at our growing business, you look at the impact that we're having on the employees that work at Banyan, you look at the impact that it's having on each of our families, and then you look at the impact that we're having in our community and our customers, extremely rewarding. Those two things for me will keep me doing this for a very long time.
So now, if there was somebody out there, what's the pain they're having where they should call you?
A lot of what we see is that operators that are managing networks of devices like this, they can get started and they will build some proprietary technology or pull technology off of a shelf that gets them going. And they have success operating in the 100 to 500 device arena. But once they start to creep into the thousands, things start to break. And we talked earlier about, you know, when you reach performance issues, when you're scaling up and you're impacting the customer experience, you're trying to train a customer to use automation and then you force them away because they're dissatisfied, that's tragic. And then when you're trying to scale a network and your endpoint goes down and that endpoint happens to be the revenue generation for your business, that's tragic. And so that's usually when we start to get the calls. We need someone to come in here and do surgery quickly and get this thing healthy. And then that's where we can help educate them on, look, here's a better solution that better supports and enables your business long-term.
All right. Can we go to Stone School for a second before we wrap his segment? So you're the number one person in your organization, right? You're the CEO. Do you have a number two person or like a really tight inner circle?
Absolutely. I've got a co-founder. His name's Webb Morris, and not sure what I'd do without him.
The reason I'm asking, I'm the number two person in a small but successful and growing enterprise here at Business Radio X. And I'm curious, what do you need and want out of that number two person, that inner circle? And I'm being quite serious. I want to learn and grow in that regard and do the best job I can. At the moment, I'm trying to focus on what few things he doesn't do well and a little longer list of things he doesn't like to do. But yeah. I'd take any advice that you have on that. Seriously.
That's a fun question. I think that when you are running a business, one of the things, I loved your question earlier about when you were removed from the large corporate structure and started your own business, what happened? What's your reaction? And I'll start to answer your question through that. To me, I really felt I stripped all of my safety net away and I felt fully vulnerable, fully naked, like I was a long time ago when I first started my professional career. That was really energizing. You know, am I worth it? Do I add value? And that has been so fun to rebuild. And I mean, for anyone thinking about this, I would say, you know, number one, recognize that that will happen. And two, be energized by it because you are value. Just the fact that you're thinking about this should give you some indication that you've got at least the right skill and thinking to make this happen. But then you start to scale. And as a leader, I think one of the things when you're operating a business is it can be a very lonely and vulnerable space in terms of you have to manage your relationships carefully. You have to manage, you're now managing every part of your business as opposed to a distinct part of your business. And I think it's hard for someone inside of the business to have the perspective that Steve is really looking out for everything. He is constantly thinking, he is constantly sweating this business. And as, you know, my ability to scale is as good as the team beneath me and their ability to fill gaps of things I'm not looking at this moment. So, you know, I think about Webb looks after all of our technology. He's our CTO. And it gives me a lot of comfort to know that I've got Webb in that role and that I trust him as closely as I do. And so I really look for the leaders within my business, my direct reports, to help fill out and provide some support for me so that I don't always have to be 100% in tune with every aspect of the business.
So your first piece of advice to Lee is if you can afford him, get Webb. Firestone and get Webb. Is that what I'm hearing? No, that's very helpful. And but I think it's important for those of us that do play that number two role or that inner circle role, we gotta figure out how to be the very best that we can be so that we can free you guys up to do what you need to do and want to do. So that's helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Well, this has been a fun conversation. Very, very informative. I knew most of it, of course, but Lee didn't know any of it. No, this has been very interesting. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. So where can our listeners learn more?
Sure. If you go to www.banyanhills.com, check out our website. There's a place there where you can send a request in. Reach out to me anytime, steve.latham@banyanhills.com. Happy to take emails and have a conversation.
All right. Hey, stay with us. We got one other guest.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
All right, Lee, the doctor is in the house. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have the fiscal doctor, Gary W. Patterson. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, and I brought a new make money tie for you.
I could see that all the way from back here behind the board. It's a pleasure to have you back. The fiscal doctor here is no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, so we knew that he would be an enlightening and entertaining guest, but you probably do have some new information to share with us. Get us caught up.
Well, the interesting thing is I'm sitting here thinking about some companies I've helped that were high-tech, cutting-edge at the time, and it's like, everyone says anybody can do that. The interesting thing that's different, I'm looking at, they've gone there, is content is great, IT is great, but the forte I've sort of moved into is everyone says, oh, that stuff's nice, but you've got to get it down to some small sound bits for me. So here's what I'm telling people now. The nice thing about going last, you can listen. Here's what I'm thinking for people. Well, where is your cash going to be 6 months from now, particularly if you're an early stage company growing? Second, where should you shore up some of your key stakeholder relationships where you're taking people for granted, employees, customers, the banker, the people that look at it? And the third one is, where is there a scrawny little 175-pound King Kong of the future growing into an 800-pound gorilla because you don't have time to look? And if you have time to look, you may not be inclined to look.
Wow. Three very good and challenging questions. And I saw everybody around the table nodding their head as you were sharing them. So if you would give us some general context on your practice, the kind of folks that you serve, what you do, and then let's dive into some of these questions because I want to flesh that out a little bit.
If you have ever felt like you are a best-kept secret, stuck, or coasting on past success, I love to help people like that solve that issue and move into sustainable, profitable growth. My mentors told me, they said, Gary, if you help us grow the top line and keep more of the bottom line, life will be a whole lot more fun. So all I do all day, every day for people, maybe not unlike yourself or your listeners, is help them address something on that perspective, follow the money, stop being a best kept secret, and go back to some really basic, simple things where I got a lot of scars along the way and less hair than I used to have.
Now, can you share a little bit about your background? What'd you get started doing?
Yeah, I started off as a fiscal doctor, make more money. You scratch me, forget healthcare, an Excel spreadsheet comes out.
So were you an accountant or CPA?
They tell me I have a smidgen of humor for the CPA CFO crew. So I am a undergraduate accounting guy, Stanford MBA, finance ops, KPMG, CPA, surprise, I join a client. I was every C-suite officer in every major industry because my family had some really bad habits.
they like stuff.
They like to eat. They like to have a house. And little puppy dogs are expensive, plus kids get even more. So having done that, I wandered into nonprofits, manufacturing, distribution, clean energy, you name it, and I have pretty much done it somewhere along the way in those major things.
So now, at this stage of your career, you're helping small to mid-sized businesses get their fiscal house in order?
I'm helping them stop being stuck, a best-kept secret, and coasting on past success. And if they get their fiscal health in order, usually finance strategy or system, because nobody has time, nobody has all the money, people, and bandwagon they need to make things work.
Now, what are some of the kind of characteristics of best-kept secrets that you've found over the years?
The best-kept secrets I have found really go down to five issues, and I'll be glad to give everybody a download on it. And I've had to make it simple because I talk across a lot of industries. Most people, two of these five, they don't have good enough control on. Where do you make your money? Second one becomes, how can you address change? The third one is, you've got some processes or some financial accounts that are a little too optimistic. Fourth one is opportunity cost. You need to get the right people on the bus in the right place. And most people have their people, money, or time frame on the wrong bus going down the wrong road.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is plain old-fashioned puffery. You kid yourself because you don't know what to change to get accurate metrics, quicker, quickly, accurately, and very precisely.
Now, how do you know, because a lot of times that you can measure things in your business, but how do you know that those are the things worth measuring?
That's the key issue. That's exactly point number five. It is hard. It sounds really easy. Let's find 3 to 5 metrics and run the business. I learned that when I was in the hamburger business. You know, how hard can it be to just tell people they should drive around the hamburger place and buy their $1 hamburger?
Right.
But every major market that did that when Rallies and Checkers came out went through $7 to $10 million. And I learned the hard way because they said, Gary, make this simple. Everyone told me make it simple. You sell stuff. Does that cash get to the bank? What's your food cost? How well do you schedule labor? And, and waste. Had to think a second. So that's why there usually was a white bucket in the corner. And when we put that information together, forget what the financials were. And when I got there, the financials were sort of worthless. But that's a different story for another time. The board and the people, the powers that be, the CEO, the board, they knew how that unit was doing. We knew what was going on. We didn't have the strategy right, but that was it. Those five things ran the business. Most people either focus on one thing or 892, which means nothing gets done.
So when you're working with a company, can you walk us through what are those first conversations look like? Because you got to determine what are the most important numbers to pay attention to, right?
I start differently. I mean, I go back to a bit of the social mission, and I've done nonprofits, mm-hmm. believe it or not. KPMG felt if I had idle time that was really bad stuff. So they made me learn lots of industries. I start off with, why are you doing this? You two have said, y'all have a mission. Y'all are doing this because you want a better perception of business and for people. So I'd ask you, what do you want to do? Why? How did you get here? And then either you'll suggest a pain point or I'll say, well, what's a pain point I can help you with? You know, I usually also say, I hope somebody said I was a nice guy or they listened to the show or something. They had a reason to come find me. But usually, if you don't know why people want to do it, it ain't going to work because you're going to give them the wrong advice. And when it's 2 a.m. Saturday night, Sunday night, Tuesday night, whatever, and things don't work according to plan, if you don't have a way to dig deep inside on this gut of why you're doing it, it's pretty easy to walk away and drift away.
So now, do you have any suggestions for folks that are trying to figure out this kind of the real at the heart of why their customer is buying from them?
They should go look at the little fiscal checkup I've got. I've got 7 questions. In 2 minutes, they can pretty much go through that. If they'll truthfully answer it, they're going to find one of 5 to 7 key issues they're not doing.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we could ask the customer, like, why did you buy from me? Right? I mean, is that a crazy strategy?
You know, I looked at the analogy preparing for this. I'm going to do another podcast about tours. I said, one of these is, why should they buy from us today?
Mm-hmm.
When I was traveling different than you did, I went down to Orlando to speak to a conference. I took an Uber. Now, I didn't take a cab. 5-7 years ago, who would have thought that the taxi industry would have a major problem because it's like, like cabs and taxis. Nobody particularly wanted to buy from them, but there was no choice. As soon as you gave them a choice, huge change where people work, what they do, the bank loans, you know, the medallions. I forget how much those things used to be worth, which were you have a monopoly situation to run a cab around from here to there. You know, if an Uber can sort of drive up, I can look at it on my phone, see where they are, when they'll get here, you know, see the picture of the person, look at that. Gee, it's dull and dreary to see a cab out there, you know. So the value of that medallion, which is the point thing, is an overstated value financial statement, or it's a process that doesn't work anymore. The ripple effect from these things, as y'all just said, is incredible. I've seen enough blood in the street. You know, that's the part of what's fun. Everyone's got a different passion. The one thing, when I wear all these things with it. I did my second book because they wanted a CPA, CFO type with a smidgen of humor. And they said, anybody that'll wear a silly tie that's got dollar bills and money and euros on that must have a smidgen of humor. And they said, don't get carried away here. We said a smidgen. And the CPA, CFO types you've got, they are not humorous speakers. So
you ought to be, so you stand out a little bit. You get booked at these conferences. And so are you doing quite a bit of speaking work on the backside of writing this book?
Yeah, you never know on these things. There is always room for one more.
Good one.
Yeah, one more good one. I enjoy helping people who say we're stuck, a best-kept secret, or coasting on past success because I've seen something in another industry that might be rocket science here, but it's dull and basic over there.
Now, do you find that this kind of knowledge transfers industry to industry? These are just kind of core truths?
I wouldn't have said that day one, but I mean, what I found is everyone says, Gary, we don't want complicated answers. People like this, where do you make your money, change, and say, here's five issues. I mean, I would, afterwards, we're off the air and another time, I let people vote. I have never done a group where someone didn't say at least two of those five I should think about. And some say it's three. I think I had one group that was really honest. And I was surprised. They said, I think we should look at all five. Oh, okay. But, you know, maybe they're making me feel good that day.
Now, are there certain industries you prefer to work in?
Ones where I can add value. I like the 10X concept. If I can't add value, I usually refer you to someone else. And I may come back and say, you know, there's an awful lot more value people can get out of the relationship with the people that do their tax return, their accountant. When you're in growth mode, and I've been there, and you have no money, now maybe not these people, but we had no money. You know, it's like, you know, what's the least we can do? How can we do even less? How can we do it cheaper? And why do we not even need to do it at all? That's the thought process.
And then, so when a company is going through their best kept secret, and then they contact you, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
The website is fiscaldoctor, fiscaldoctor.com. It's Gary at Fiscal Doctor. There's a contact page with some goodies, or pick up the phone. It's there. Just give me a call. Love to help people.
And the two books, where can we get our hands on them? Amazon or a website for that too?
Amazon will sell it to you cheaper than I can even get it printed.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, gentlemen. This has been a fantastic segment. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. Lee, beats the heck out of working, doesn't it?
I know. Another day in paradise.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.